Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
People are watching this race and they're wondering, I win, he wins, I win, he wins. I win, he wins, I win, he wins.
But this time, Senator Clinton lost by not winning bigger in Indiana or losing smaller in North Carolina. She falls behind by more elected delegates and by another 200,000 popular votes. Basically, the Clinton coalition and the Obama coalition, if you look at all the exit poll numbers, each held yesterday. And that's bad news for Clinton because it means all the talk about Reverend Wright and alleged elitism did not collapse his bases of support. Now, that makes it much harder this morning, let's be honest, for Clinton to argue that superdelegates should overturn the will of the elected delegates. And according to the New York Times this morning, the Clinton campaign is broke. In fact, we have a flash from the AP from just a few minutes ago that says she announced that she has lent herself, or she has lent her campaign, more than $6 million in the last month. So it's time to ask the question. For the first time this morning, and we have never asked this question before on this show, only now, for the first time, there appears to be a real reason to at least ask the question, should Clinton give it up? So post to our webpage at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and Clinton supporters, call us, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Now, only Clinton supporters, please, on the phone. So for you listeners and for our screener, because it's really up to you. We know what Obama supporters are going to say this morning. Anyone can post on the website, but callers, Hillary supporters only, should Hillary give it up now? 212-433-9692. As we take a close look at yesterday's results with WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and Melissa Harris-Lacewell, professor of politics and African-American studies at Princeton. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
And good morning.
Andrea, fair to say their coalitions both held?
Their coalitions both did hold, but some very interesting things happened with respect to Obama this race. In almost all of the states, he has done better in the pre-primary polls than he's actually done at the voting booth. But this was the opposite. He actually outperformed the late polls, which showed Clinton handily winning Indiana and North Carolina pretty tight. In fact, this race ended exactly where it began, if you count the beginning as the Pennsylvania primary, which is Obama with a pretty healthy double-digit lead in North Carolina, and essentially a tie in Indiana. I mean, I know Clinton won, but it was by such a narrow margin that I think that you could claim that fairly that state was pretty evenly divided. Some other interesting things, in some of those southern rural counties where Clinton, which is, you know, the South, capital S,
that's
in Indiana.
Southern, in Indiana, near Kentucky.
Near Kentucky. She did well, but she did not do as well as she did in some of the rural counties in Pennsylvania. She pretty much consistently won 2-1 in those counties, whereas in Pennsylvania, I think in one county she had 82% of the vote. So all of this talk about elitism, the gas tax holiday did not gin up that vote for her. And in the suburbs of Indianapolis, she lost pretty handily, and I was there last week. Seemed like they were trending towards her. I mean, this is an area that's kind of like Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley went to her, but she lost it. And I'm wondering if there was actually a backlash on the gas tax issue because she was calling people who weren't supporting her elitists. And she was so sort of, are you with us or against us, that I'm wondering if that population decided at the end they didn't want to take that. They were going with her. So really, and even though it looks static, things happened, but then they came out the way they were at the beginning.
So, Professor Harris-Lacewell, why do you think that might have been the case? If the polls were showing a better day for Clinton and then people broke at the last minute for Obama more than expected, why did that happen?
Well, I keep arguing that we have to be very careful about the polls in these later primary states. Remember that in the early primary states, the pollsters normally do actually a pretty good job because they've got all their samples and their people on the ground. You know, we knew no matter what happened, we were going to have an Iowa caucus and a New Hampshire primary. But I mean, really, the pollsters were not expecting to have to do this work in North Carolina, Indiana, and some of these later states. So I'm actually putting a lot less stock in the polls, not because they're not bright, fabulous people, but the groundwork simply is not laid. So I think we have to be careful about that. I think the other piece of it is that, you know, the Obama campaign is making a pretty clear argument that he has won the nomination from a little d Democratic perspective. In other words, the voters have chosen him as the nominee of the party. And that the only way for Hillary Clinton to win the nomination is through these kind of superdelegates. And, you know, these are sort of heartland voters, you know, in Indiana. They seemed real split on that. Of course, the other big piece of it is Indiana's right next door to Illinois. A whole big chunk of that is getting Chicago media market. They know Barack Obama. He's a known quantity to them. And, of course, in North Carolina, you saw, you know, Hillary Clinton got a smaller percentage of the African-American vote last night than George W. Bush got of the African-American vote in 2004. Mm. So race is central to this campaign still.
Let's hear from some Clinton supporters. Adam in Rockland, you're on WNYC. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Professor. I'm sorry. I think that's nonsense. Essentially, you could make the case that the voters chose Al Gore and the Electoral College chose President Bush. If the superdelegates decide in their wisdom, or lack of wisdom, what have you, to vote for Hillary Clinton, and she becomes the president, she's still the president, or the Democratic candidate.
Sorry. So you think she should stay in and make that case to the superdelegates?
This is politics. This is democracy. This is our democracy. And if we, the people, decide that we want to change the rules, then we have that privilege. But right now, today, in this day and time, if she wins the superdelegates, then she wins the nomination.
Right. But so, Adam, what's the case now to the superdelegates? Because after last night's numbers, and with only some very small states yet to vote, she can't catch up very much anymore in elected delegates. So she's going to have to tell the superdelegates to, you know, ignore the will of the elected delegates and go for her because what?
Well, the superdelegates have to ask themselves what there is. The onus is on them, each individually, whether or not they want to go with the electorate or whether they want to go with their own hearts. And that's what their privilege is.
Adam, thank you very much. Let's go to Deborah in Armonk here on WNYC. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Brian. I am a Hillary supporter, and I agree with Adam to the extent that the superdelegates can put her over the top. I do think the Republicans will do a major swift boating job on Barack Obama if he becomes the nominee. I don't think he's electable at this time in our society, which is unfortunate, but I do think Hillary can very well be electable, and the superdelegates can put her over the top.
Either of you want to engage with Deborah on this question of electability?
Oh, well, I mean, certainly I think Deborah's accurate that this is the case that the Hillary Clinton campaign is making. They're making a case that they have won more of these later primaries, the momentum is going in her direction, and that she's the one who can win. Now, part of how they're making that argument, though, has to do with the particular breakdown of the two Democratic coalitions that are emerging here around Obama and Clinton. I just want to caution superdelegates and Democratic voters that right now the demographics where Hillary Clinton is leading are demographics where once we get to the general election, those folks are normally about 2-1 or 1.5-1 GOP voters. So, you know, really right now it is Barack Obama who's winning the base of the party.
But arguably, Andrea, people in those demographics who turn out for a Democratic primary are up for grabs, and the Democratic Party needs to be as strong as it can in swing states among those Clinton demographics.
Well, yeah. I mean, what Obama argued in his speech last night, he's been arguing for throughout this campaign, is he's going to change the math. Now, one of the things, I mean, there were all kinds of sub-themes to these elections, but one of the sub-themes of Indiana and North Carolina was old politics, new politics. And the Clintons, I think, sort of pretty much widely were slammed by editorial boards for the gas tax holiday, for using what was seen as old politics, dividing people, sort of saying anything, some editorial boards described it, to win. And Obama sort of punched back, and he said, well, I'm not going to go there. I'm going to have a new kind of politics. And what's interesting is the center in that argument held, that he was able to keep. So I think it does give him some fodder for saying, look, I am upending the math in this race, which, you know, I mean, I think the Southern white voter and the white rural voter issue is a real issue. I spent a lot of time in Southern Indiana last week, and those people could not bring themselves to say they would vote for Obama under any circumstances. So he has to deal with that.
So let me go back to Deborah. Oh, Deborah's gone. Okay. I was going to ask Deborah if she was so worried about Obama getting swift voted, what was it that she thought the swift voting would be about? Will it still, and I wonder what you both think, will it still be about Reverend Wright and, you know, bitter and cling, or is that going to just lose its punch over time?
I suspect the Reverend Wright controversy will have to lose its punch over time. I mean, you know, Obama tried to thread the needle and walk the tightrope with the Philadelphia speech, where he sort of held on but then pushed back. Now, after last week, he's kind of made the clear break. I think it would be tough to keep bringing up Reverend Wright. But the fact is,
and by the way, someone just emailed me a few minutes ago that Obama has defriended Wright on his Facebook page. So now we know it is really over.
It's really over between them. But that said, there's no question that race is going to be the subtext and the question here. I think gender is going to show up. You know, look, John McCain is an older white man. That's what we're used to seeing in the U.S. presidency. Either of these Democratic candidates are going to have to fight against standard stereotypes about what either their race or gender brings to it. But I think that's part of what's exciting about this election, is that we as Americans are going to get this opportunity to challenge these very stereotypes. I don't think we can run from them. We got to walk right through them.
Brandon in Manhattan, Clinton supporter?
Yes, I am.
Should she stay in?
No, I don't think so. At this point, the rhetoric on both sides is getting so hot that they're going to polarize the party completely. And the Clinton voters won't vote for Obama, and Obama won't vote for her, and they're going to give McCain a freebie, maybe. I think Obama has issues in terms of electability, but at this point, the party seems to have spoken. And I think if you use the superdelegates as a way to undermine the little D, as the lady said, of democracy for voting, then, and with all these young people coming out to vote, I think they're going to feel really disenfranchised.
Brandon, thank you very much. Now, here is how Senator Clinton spun all this in her speech last night.
Not too long ago, my opponent made a prediction. He said I would probably win Pennsylvania. He would win North Carolina. And Indiana would be the tiebreaker. Well, tonight, we've come from behind. We've broken the tie. And thanks to you, it's full speed on to the White House.
So that still sounded very confident, and she, sounded very happy about the Indiana result. But you noticed an exchange this morning on our new morning show, The Takeaway, between co-host Adore Udoji and Clinton campaign manager Howard Wolfson. Before we play it, do you want to set up why this jumped out at you?
Well, I think that the Clinton campaign has been pretty game. You know, and I would say since their Ohio-Texas victory night, although they did lose the Texas caucuses, since that night, they've been sort of flying in the face of math, saying, we can do it, we can do it, we can do it. And they have managed to prevail in that argument. But this morning was the first time, I think, that I've sort of heard them acknowledge pretty publicly the steepness of the mountain that needs to be climbed.
If you're saying that it will be decided by the voters, I mean, you're looking at a very high percentage of the vote that Senator Clinton would have to get, 70% or better by most estimates, not only of the vote, but also of the superdelegates. Is that realistic?
Well, it's what we have to do. I mean, we are going to have to do well. There's no question about it.
Short response, but there's a bit of a pause there, and they do have to do well. And I think one of the interesting things here is that the math is almost getting to the point where if Clinton completely prevails on Michigan and Florida, she gets her way entirely and manages to take the delegates, whatever they would be, for the votes that she got, that she still wouldn't be able to do it without an overwhelming majority of the superdelegates. Mm. So I think that, you know, tonight, I think that this is not what they wanted in Indiana. There was a period of great tension last night in the Clinton headquarters, I understand, where they thought that they were going to win pretty handily. And the early numbers showed her way ahead, and it kept tightening until by the end of the night, we were all waiting for Lake County, and there was an actual belief that Lake County, home to Gary, Indiana, could upend this election.
Norma in Manhattan, Clinton supporter?
Yes, I am. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm an older white lady. I am not a racist. I have black doctors. I've had black boyfriends. But I'll tell you something, I consider Obama a snake oil salesman. I think he is a super con man, and I will under no conditions vote for him. So I think for the
What do you think he's selling? If he's a con man, what's his con?
He's just selling a dream of something ephemeral that is not realistic. But I know with Hillary, we know what her background is. We know what she's tried to do in the past. And I think that's something much more solid.
Norma, thank you very much. And here is a little bit of how Obama spun last night's results.
That's why I'm in this race. I love this country too much to see it divided and distracted at this critical moment in history. I believe in our ability to perfect this nation, because it's the only reason I'm standing here today. I know the promise of America because I've lived it.
And Professor Harris Lacewell, very interesting rhetoric, and I think that that is the language that we heard more and more of from Obama since the Reverend Wright thing broke, since the thing about bitter and clinging to guns and religion, professing his love for the country very overtly in his speeches.
Sure, there's the patriotism piece here, and that's been going on in the town hall meetings as well. It's sort of the stump speech emerging out of the town hall meetings in that sense.
That make him something of a snake oil salesman, to quote Norma?
Well, I mean, I think he
wasn't saying that before, and all of a sudden when he's on the defensive about that kind of positioning,
certainly each of these candidates is in a very long race, and they have repositioned themselves multiple times. Hillary Clinton did not start out as the blue-collar, gun-toting candidate that she is now, and Barack Obama is making more use of his language of patriotism. Now, I do think he's talked an awful lot about his autobiography, which was a big part of this story about why he loves his country. I think that has been central all the way back to the Senate campaign. The one question I do want to put on the table here, though, around this issue of the Democratic Party, is not just whether or not the base of each of these Democratic presidential candidates will vote for the other, but what is happening to the rest of the party while we're having this fight at the top? The money, the energy, the effort. On the one hand, it's great. We're getting people registered in all these other states. But we're also taking an awful lot of Democratic Party resources, putting them all in the fight for the White House, so that the rest of the party, like what I like to call dog catcher, the Senate, is not getting our attention, our focus. Who even knows what their key congressional races are these days? We've got to, maintain the House, extend the lead in the Senate. I mean, the Democratic Party has a lot of work to do beyond regaining the White House.
But it's early for Democrats to talk about the congressional work, isn't it? They don't have to be talking about that so much in May to the national media.
Look how much money is going. I mean, she's in the second, not even in the second paragraph. Hillary Clinton is asking for donations last night. Certainly, Barack Obama's team always sends out their emails with their little red donate now. You have all of these new first-time donors who are maxing out to these, might be maxing out in their personal budgets to these presidential campaigns. We want that money available for the DNC to be distributing to all of our local
I would argue that I would argue that not only is it early, but that the Obama campaign or the Clinton campaign could come back with, we have brought new people into the political process, and those people can go back. I mean, there was just a special election in, I believe, Louisiana, in a very Republican district in which a Democrat won. So I think that there's certainly the candidates at the top of the ticket could argue that they are helping the party. I mean, I do think there is this this underbelly for Obama if he indeed becomes the nominee. And, you know, you heard him last night really hammering on his modest roots on, you know, son of a single mother and how his wife's, how his father-in-law worked in a factory and was ill and sent his daughter to this fancy, you know, I think he said one of the best colleges in the nation. So I think that we are
That's how we like to think of ourselves at Princeton.
A lot. Did she go to Princeton?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. There you go. So, but I think that that is one of the things he really is emphasizing because, I mean, it is interesting that Clinton is the choice of the blue-collar, less well-off voters, but she, in some ways, it could be argued, had a more privileged background than did Obama. But that is really a challenge for him because if those voters are alienated, there is a potential, I think, for what you are talking about, which is for the sort of Democratic Party down ticket votes to start losing some seats to Republicans.
Well, and that's true if African-American voters are alienated as well. Remember, they're what holds the South in terms of the congressional, the gubernatorial.
Both of these
are real possibilities.
Right. I do have to say, though, that in my conversations with voters, I have certainly found much harder positions against voting for Obama among working-class white voters than African-American voters who, until this race, liked Hillary Clinton.
But people may stay home. African-American voters liked Mark Green before the 2001 mayoral race. That's and exactly in those right. last few days of the primary, where he was accused, fairly or not, of doing race baiting against Fernando Ferrer, there was so much defection in November. People just stayed home. And some of them voted for Bloomberg.
Right. And it depends on the legacy. You know, I mean, were this scenario, which is increasingly unlikely to come to pass, it would really depend on how much time there is to repair those bonds. But it looks like a very steep mountain as of today.
But before we run out of time, I just want to dig into these exit polls a little bit because it struck me that the potential defection rate for each of them appears to be about the same if they get the nomination, at least based on yesterday's results. If Clinton wins, about 26% of Obama voters said they would stay home or vote for McCain. 28%, so basically the same, of Clinton voters if Obama is the nominee. So it's not like Clinton can argue that Obama is unelectable based on Democratic defectors uniquely.
Based on the exit polls, certainly not. I mean, I find it, you know, sort of if I don't get my choice, I'm, you know, going home. That argument made now in May is still pretty early. And, you know, I still believe that Democrats believe the stakes are very high for them in this election and that, you know, whoever is at the top of the ticket, if they can't overcome that, then there's a question about whether, you know, they should be winning.
And Andrea, you were struck by the cares about me, cares about people like me statistic in the exit polls.
That's right. I mean, Obama won that in Indiana, now narrowly, but he still won. And that was the whole argument that Clinton was making. He doesn't get us. And he just slayed on that point in North Carolina. So the fact that people believe that Obama can connect with them is something that is pretty impressive. And, you know, where there was a very big difference was on the question of who don't you trust. Lots more people said they didn't trust Hillary Clinton than said they didn't trust Barack Obama.
Now, that is such an interesting statistic. Trustworthiness and honesty. Let's see. Let me find this. Honest and trustworthy. Clinton is honest and trustworthy. 54% said yes in Indiana. 66% said Obama is trustworthy and honest. And 45% said Clinton is not, where only 33% said Obama is not. So he comes out much more trustworthy and honest, whether people want to vote for him or not.
Right.
And Professor,
it may be that they don't want to vote for somebody trustworthy and honest if they don't like the system.
Last thing, Professor Harris Lacewell, I saw many commentators on cable last night, and I know you were on CNN this morning, which I didn't see, but I, you know, maybe this came up, say Obama is developing a George McGovern, Walter Mondale problem because his coalition is African-Americans, voters 18 to 30, and upper-income white liberals. And McGovern and Mondale were almost shut out against Nixon and Reagan. With that kind of coalition goes this critique. How much at risk is an Obama general election campaign of winding up that way?
I think that an Obama general election campaign has the possibility of winning both Virginia and Ohio. By the way, I also think Clinton has the capacity to possibly win Virginia and Ohio. And I think that Virginia and Ohio are the two states that are going to be key for Democrats in this election. I don't think either one of them can win Florida. And I think the real question is who is going to be best able to take Virginia and Ohio. Now, in the primaries, Barack took Virginia and Hillary Clinton took Ohio. So I don't think we can tell from the primaries, but I think those are the two states. And I think it's silly to suggest that parties can't and shouldn't move their coalitions. In fact, I think we're ripe for a realignment.
And we'll come back to this next hour. But, Andrea, what happens now? If there is more serious talk abounding this morning about whether Clinton should drop out, what actually happens?
Well, has that resulted in anything thus far? I think that the
no,
primary
but the situation
is
different today than it was after any other primary.
She is looking very good in West Virginia, very good in Kentucky, very good in Puerto Rico, and I think she'll finish it out. And I think sometime in June there will be a decision about who is the Democratic nominee.
And if she finishes, meaning goes through all the primaries and caucuses up through June 3rd, she's just waiting for some other Obama scandal to hit because that's her only path to victory?
Or she's just seeing it through to the end to carry forward the argument that all the voters should get their say.
WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein, Professor Melissa Harris-Lacewell from the Politics and African American Studies departments at Princeton. Thank you both very much. And coming up in a minute, we will talk to a New York Post reporter who is suing the city because he said he was profiled in a stop and frisk. And then we'll talk to two people about the Sean Bell-related protest today and some of the outstanding policy questions and incompetence questions and how they'll be dealt with. Stay with us.